My mom used to have say to me, because you know, I'd go, I can't believe you're gonna drop me off on the in the pink Cadillac at school for cheerleading practice. And I was so upset, and the kids, you know, because I was bullied mercilessly, among many other reasons, one of which was just I was smarter than all of them. The sixth grade girls, 1 year older than me, were just demons. They were just demons. And I would say, why do we have to have it drop off in a pink car? And she said, Teeter, do not let anybody give you grief about that color of that car. You just snap right back at them and say, what color is your free car?
Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candice Rodarte, and today I'm joined by Teresa Rose. Teresa is a brand and business crystallizer, strategic co-creator, and certified speaking professional who works with experts and their businesses to create one-of-a-kind visual brands they can draw on a cocktail napkin. Using her crystallization process, Teresa helps thought leaders clarify, amplify, and monetize their brilliance as efficiently and lucratively as possible. Welcome, yes. Teresa.
Thank you, Candace. Thank you.
So tell us your story. How'd you get to where you are today?
Oh my gosh. That is always such a hilarious question because, I mean, we could be here for hours, all right? Because honestly, mine starts when I'm 5 years old. It just does. That's where it starts.
Actually, technically, your story starts when you're 5 minutes old, but okay.
Well, even if we get super duper cosmic, it could start, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Eons ago,
that's
right?
True,
that we're
true,
bringing
that's true.
In to this lifetime. That's true. Anyway, sorry. So
go on.
So I'm going to see if I can bring it down to its essence as I am a crystallizer. I grew up in a with a direct sales mom. And I, as a single mom, she was my first exposure to entrepreneurism. It was a family business, and I would be around the kitchen tables of strange women growing up. I rode shotgun in a pink Cadillac. Okay. That's what I learned. And so when we talk about things that are very, you know, the thought leadership du jour, I go back, you know, 50 years to core development time as a human, having taken in Zig Ziglar, Napoleon Hill, Dale Carnegie, right? Mary Kay Ash. Mary Kay Ash was the only woman in that field of infinite possibilities back then, right? So I learned that stuff. And so that sort of colors everything that I do then, right? I go through this lens because it was a developmental part of my life to watch a single mother hustle and learn the art of marketing and sales. I mean, my mom was like, whoa, right? I could see her do what she needed to do to grow a team and to create a lasting impact. She was with that organization for 30 years up until her passing in 2006. So that was something that there were amazing things that I learned about that. And there were also things that were challenging about that. And I took all that and I, you know, was naturally a theatrical person. I was one of those people who always wanted to, Carol Burnett was my hero. You know, I loved comedy. I loved doing voices. I would do things all the time. Da, la, 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 la. You know, who wants to do it? I will. Who wants to be Mary? I will. Who wants to be Rudolph? I will. Right. So all those things kind of got me into being a performer, right? I'm very comfortable on stage. And I followed a passion of theater up until I decided, wait, I don't look like the typical girls that make it in theater or in acting or in movies or any of that. I don't. I'm 5'3" and I'm, you know, quarter pounder with cheese number three extra value meal is my happy best friend, you know? So I wasn't the typical, you know, ingenue. So I went, okay, I had already been, you know, I don't want to sound so pretentious, but, you know, I was in the gifted program. Okay. And it's because my brain works in certain ways that I see context. I see pictures and puzzles, and I love word games, and I just, my brain works that way. So I just decided, okay, when you are going to go to college, if you're not going to pursue what you really love, which is performance, being in front of people and being a performer in any way, then maybe you should just go into business because you can understand all of it. And so I went down hoofing the path of, okay, business management, and here's what we're going to do. And I started to work as a temp and parlayed a job as a temp because I learned about how to work hard and how to learn in every instance and take something from any instance and grow and become smarter from it. All of those totally what would seem as insignificant experiences in my life, like do these temp jobs in downtown Chicago, right? And things that I could tell you, oof, right? Like there's some stories. And so I've learned all along the way, I would just keep capitalizing on the opportunities as they presented themselves to me each and every time. I turned a temp job into a permanent secretarial job. I turned the secretarial job into, a project manager job in a startup organization. And then I turned that into, you know, the deeper levels of responsibility, right? And so I went way down that path running, you know, $100 million of annual revenue for a Fortune 100 company. I could understand the politics, the dynamics, the nuances required to get anything done in an enterprise, right? Because you had to. When there are companies that big, you can't, you know, you can't just lean into, relationship. It's like different companies, really, right, that you're navigating. And then life gives another snow globe moment, right? And I got laid off from that company, and I started down the consulting path, and I worked that and learned a lot of things about different industries. And then another snow globe moment. And I couldn't find a job. I got laid off from that company and I couldn't find a job. And I got into alternative healing. Here's where the whole hockey stick to the right conversation goes in my journey is I go into alternative healing. And that's through 1 week of crazy magic from in Sedona, Arizona, where I went to not one, not two, but three psychics that all told me, you're not going to go back to business. You're not supposed to do that anymore. You're not supposed to do that. No, not anymore. You're not supposed to do that right now. Right. And I was like, I don't even know what that means. Just tell me where the job is. And long story short, I know I'm too late, but long story short, I actually end up going to massage therapy school because I thought, hey, I don't have to look for a job and I'm going to give and receive massages every day. Sign me up. That sounds fantastic. I'll take an 8-month break from my life of looking for a job. And in day one, I got introduced formally to Reiki. And Reiki is an energy healing that I had used previously just a few years before with the birth of my daughter. And so I was very familiar with how it helped me personally. And so I was like, ooh, what's that stuff? What's that stuff? And all of a sudden, my life started to become about energy management. I opened a healing center called Energy Works. I did guided meditations and taught classes. I was nationally certified as a teacher of Reiki. So all of these kinds of things happened. And then another snow globe moment where mom got sick. And when mom got sick, I started to, it was the most beautiful and transformational time of my entire life. To go in eyes wide open and heart wide open through the doorway of the earthly transition is, you know, it's transformative. And I really told myself that I was going to walk through that door purposefully. And I did. And I accidentally stumbled into a writing role with a magazine that I I had an article in that turned into a book, which turned into a speech or into a reading, doing a reading at a book club or a book store. And someone said, how much would you charge to come talk to my company? And I went, charge? Money? To speak in front of people? Remember the little child who would line up the stuffed animals? Okay. suddenly the quiet actress inside who never fed her soul on stage went, oh yeah, baby. And I started in on keynote speaking, right? And I just talked from the heart. I talked about all the material that I'd learned over all of my life of being in a role of holistic energy management, of consciousness studies, of business management, of all the things that I had done, sales, right? Marketing, and brought it into that one experience. And now, as you have me, Candace, all these different parts of me, what I realized is in one of these iterations of my life, one of the snow globe moments of my life, was that I led a global thought leadership practice in a network, a global executive network. And I got a chance to hear firsthand from people what was really going on in their businesses. Okay. Like, because I was kind of this safe administrator, coach, liaison role, they could drop their armor, as Brene Brown calls it, dropping the armor of that. And I could see how brilliant they were. I could see that because I was talking to them and learning about them and watching them on Zoom calls, right? Seeing them do this, but they were struggling. And what I noticed is that the single through line of their struggle was a lack of clarity. They couldn't see themselves like I could see them. And in my marketing and sales hat, okay, of how do we sell our services and products in a very crowded, chaotic, traumatized, distracted, noisy marketplace where nobody needs to read another thing? How do you get noticed? How does your brilliance get noticed? Right? Why you're here on this planet. When your brilliance gets noticed, which really in my life, I really perceive it as someone's spirit print, like their light within them, and how they show up and what matters to them the most. And when they do that, then they're noticed amongst the noise. And so I start doing that for brands and businesses, using everything that I just told you from 5 years of old being around a kitchen table to now, how I can weave a solution for people to be seen and understood.
I have so many questions for you. I know there's so many. Whew. Okay. So you're 5 years old. Your mom has her Mary Kay business. And did you say that was 50 years ago?
It was in 1975.
Okay. So
48 years ago.
40 years ago. So that, so are we the same age?
I'm a proud 53.
We're 53, we are the exact same age. All right.
So,
so you're love 5 years old. You're 5 years old. You're helping your mom around the kitchen table with her Mary Kay business. And that's when Mary Kay really took off, was the mid-70s. I remember being in the 70s. I remember my mom and my sister, because my sister is older than me, going to Mary Kay parties.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So
my mom was one of the forerunners. She was one of the forerunners in that.
And that was Mary Kay, the company started in the 60s, didn't it?
It started in 1963.
Yeah.
And so, I could tell you, honestly, this is what if nothing else your listeners can take in is if they are parents. I want to just pivot just for a moment and talk to the parents. And I'm getting so warm, I'm going to take off because I got to really get into this. Okay. The fact of the matter is that when your children are small, I was a product of a divorce, of a very unkind divorce when I was 5 years old. And, I have two older brothers. That's a traumatic experience to go through, right? We all go through trauma. And what we do to surround our children, regardless of what happens to them in the circumstances of what might be happening in the world, is an imprinting essential thing, right? So all of those times I was taking in all that goodness that my mom was reading. She'd get little books from Mary Kay Ash, right? You Can Do It books. You can, mm-hmm. I had a stuffed, I want to tell you about Ms. Bear. I know it's a tangent, but Ms. Bear is one of my favorite stories.
Being grateful means that you're grateful for the tangents.
I'm so grateful for this story that it's coming up because it's one of my dearest, dearest stories. So, I mean, imagine a little girl who I won most enthusiastic in second grade. Okay, literally have the certificate of most enthusiastic in second grade because I have been just surrounded by positivity and surrounded by oomph. And one year, Mary Kay gave a stuffed animal that was a little bear, and she had a little business suit on, and her name was Ms. Bear. And you could pull Ms. Bear's string, and she would go, "You can go to the top. You're perfect, just perfect. Be what you want to be." You know, so while the other girls are looking, are having the Barbie playhouse, I'm the colossal nerd that is having a Ms. Bear, right? I mean, I had so much judgment about myself and my mom and what it was, because it was unheard of back then. My mother was the one that had the false eyelashes and the long painted fingernails and the fur coat and singing "I Will Survive" in the pink Cadillac.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So you're 5 years old. You have this mom who is doing this thing.
Yeah.
Okay. The reason why I want to share this story is because I've been doing network marketing my entire life. So my daughter heard The Secret in the car everywhere we went from the age of, you know, 8, right? And Zig Ziglar or any of those, you know, leaders. Because I'm a fan of, my cat never does this.
I mean, this is I love it.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I'm a pet person.
Shade may have just made his first podcast appearance in years.
Obviously,
he didn't like being the center of attention. So what I love about this story is that you got to absorb all of those positive things, because the number one thing that network marketing does is that it teaches you professional development, personal development. You know, and I was not very good at selling Arbonne at all. I'm not a makeup person. Arbonne was not a good fit for me. But the 2 or 3 years that I spent trying to make an Arbonne business work, I absorbed all of that professional development and it moved me to the next place.
Absolutely.
So I think that your mom did a fantastic job of raising you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, and I feel her in my heart right now. Thank you.
My second question is about the legacy. So when she passed away, did Mary Kay leave a legacy? Did you inherit the business?
Oh, no.
They didn't do that back then?
No.
Okay. I know they do that now. And I was just wondering, because I wanted to share that in case it did happen, because that's one of the huge things that Mary Kay does. And I'm not a Mary Kay consultant, but I'm a fan of the business model.
Yeah.
One of the things that Mary Kay does now is that when you pass away, you can leave an heir and someone can take your business, take control of your business. So a lot of Mary Kay consultants, they are building their legacy so that their children or their grandchildren can take their business.
Well, that's good. That's good. You know what? I tried to do Mary Kay twice. And I mean, I can talk the paint off the walls. Okay. So it's not about me not being, outspoken. I won most valuable cheerleader. I mean, I'll go into a room that's, and do pom poms hit me with your best shot. So how can I fail at that? Well, it is something where I believe that we all have a path, all have a path. And I tried twice to do the path that my mom was doing, because it's totally smart. It's such smart business. It's ridiculous. It's not about the lipstick.
No,
it's not about the lipstick. Right. Mm-mm. My mom used to say to me, cause I'd go, "I can't believe you're going to drop me off in the pink Cadillac at school for cheerleading practice." And I was so upset, and the kids, cause I was bullied mercilessly, among many other reasons, one of which was just, I was smarter than all of them. The sixth grade girls, 1 year older than me, were just demons. They were just demons.
Yeah.
And I would say, why do we have to have a drop off in a pink car? And she said, "Teeter, do not let anybody give you grief about that color of that car. You just snap right back at them and say, what color is your free car?
What color is your free car?" You know what? It's such a big deal now, though. I mean, I think, well, I don't know. Kids might be embarrassed about their mom's pink Cadillac.
It doesn't matter. See, this is what, you know, it's what time will teach you.
Yeah.
What time will teach you is perspective.
Yeah.
Right. So, okay. I mean, it's my daughter. This is the same way about being a you know, her mother was, a professional motivational speaker, right? Mm-hmm. I'm on hundreds of stages. And so she'd go like when she was growing up around, you know, I would say sixth grade or so. One time I was hoofing it up to a Northern Minnesota speaking engagement. And I said, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have to put all these hula hoops in the trunk. I was a hoop dancing that. Oh, I threw that in there just for grins. I was a hoop dancing. I have a TEDx talk called The Power of Joyful Movement. But I would go, I can't believe I have to do this. I have to put all this stuff in and it's a blizzard and I'm going to drive up north and do all this stuff. And she goes, Mother, you don't have to, you get to. She was using my own content against me. Can you believe that, kid?
I love it. I love it.
Oh my gosh. It was so, you know what I mean? You don't know what you have when you're right in it. And that's part of what I do as a crystallizer. What I believe that's part of why I'm so good at this is that I can take the time to see people, because honestly, I believe that one of the biggest challenges that people have in their success in their lives, especially in their businesses, is they simply have a lack of clarity about what the situation really is, what their gifts and talents are, what they offer to the world, how can they be seen genuinely, seen and understood and honored. And when it's even better when you can create a visual brand around it and replicate it consistently, right? I mean, I take it to a strategic level, but it's also just about being seen too, right?
Yeah.
Because there are clients that I've had crystallized, brands and businesses that I've crystallized, that even if they don't use the brand, actual thing that we created, the model, they understand themselves now to such a degree that their interviews are better and that their sales conversations are better, that their speeches are better, right? All the things that are kind of key metrics of success for what they are looking for their dreams to come true, they know themselves better. And that only comes from sacred, you know, really intentional witnessing.
Yeah. So let's talk about that branding thing. I have to tell you that I saw an episode of South Park where they were making fun of personal brands.
Oh God. Well,
the reason why they were making fun of them though, was because they went to a brand consultant and the brand consultant told them who they were and that they were supposed to act that way.
Oh, of course. Right.
So why don't you just dig into that one? I'm not even going to touch that one with my opinion. You just talk about that.
Well, I will offer that as a branded business crystallizer, I am not like the other kids, in the sense that most marketing and branding people that I have heard about, some that I've heard of, that have come with, you know, great wounds, right? People have spent a lot of money and a lot of time on a hope that this organization, this agency, this person will tell them, that will get them out of the darkness, Because again, what do I see as the core pain point? The core pain point is lack of clarity. You can't see yourself. You can't see from the inside. That's how we're designed. I actually truly believe if we want to get airy fairy cosmic muffiny, we can reverse back to the, you know, the healing center days. Imagine that I'm wearing lavender, you know, you can smell lavender and you can hear Enya in the background, but you can just imagine that this idea of co-creation is, I actually believe that we're designed. I believe we are divinely designed to not reach our fullest potential without the support and witnessing of another. I think we're built to connect. And that's part of what's challenging now is we are faced in a situation where we now need to connect through machines largely.
Yeah. But if you do it right, I mean, since the pandemic, I've met so many more people than I ever would have met before, you know, I've developed really, like I have a good friend that I've never met in person, but you know, I adore her.
Oh gosh.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, but we talk on Zoom.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a whole, every single one of my clients, I can't think of a single one of them. One, I have one client right now who I have met in person. The rest of them I've never met in person.
Oh, I know. You know what sometimes happens too, is I do this deep dive work with these people. Okay. In the crystallization work that I do, I digest their brilliance. I have them create a box of brilliance and I have them put everything that they have shined in. Okay. And all you do is just think, I want wherever I've shined, articles I've written, podcast I've been on, books I've written, books I've tried to write but didn't finish, and is word salad and thought spaghetti, speeches I've done, everything. You put it all in there. I digest all of it, read it, listen to it, watch it, single focus with nothing else beeping, no other thing I'm doing. I'm actually with their material in a mindful way. And therefore, what starts to happen is I distill down to its essence who they really are, and I can design a one of a kind model around it. So by the time I'm with these people in actual face to face, we are like group, you know, hardcore hugging, right? Yeah. Hardcore hugging, because you're like, oh my God, I know you.
Yeah. Well, you took the time to get to know them.
Exactly. Well, and therein lies the difference.
You're describing something completely different than what other folks do. Other folks have you take a test.
Yes.
And then based on the answers to your test on that day.
Yes.
You put yourself in a box, in a category, exactly. And then you're supposed to stick to that box.
Yeah. Which is, you're told who you are. You're told who you are. You say, you fill out this 57 page survey, or you spend a day with us at X amount, and we're going to start at the meeting at 8 o'clock after we've all had our, you know, bagels and fruit cups and coffee, and we finally settle in and we go, okay, so tell me about you. Tell me what you do. And the person who's just paid the $15,000 or whatever the number is goes, okay, I already feel uncomfortable. I don't really know. That's why I'm paying you guys. Yeah. And I'm going to kind of just start saying what I think you want me to say. And then they go, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. What happens is the impetus, the whole exploration of somebody's brilliance. And it's so very challenging to bring it down to something you could draw on a cocktail napkin, because it takes a lot of work to get that simple.
Yeah.
All right. It takes a lot of work to get that simple. There's a famous, to me, I love it so much. It's the quote from Pascal, and I'm going to butcher it. I should know it by now. It's, forgive the length of this letter. I did not have the time to write a shorter one. Okay. So it takes a lot to be concise.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, and Hemingway would spend hours to write a 2000 word, whatever his goal was to write every day. He would spend hours at it to get the concise amount of words. Exactly. But when you read Hemingway, you know exactly what he means, because there's nothing extra.
Crystallizing it, bringing mm-hmm. it down to its essence. That's what I serve, that role that I serve in that way. And it's I believe the difference. And yeah. I stand in that absolutely confidently and clearly every single day, all day long. I can talk about how I share my brilliance in the world with other people who want to share their brilliance with the world. And that is through clarify, amplify, monetize. When you can clarify your brilliance so well that you can draw it on a cocktail napkin that makes you different than everyone else, then you can amplify it strategically and consistently across all the ways people take in your content, read you, listen to you, watch you, and interact with you, choosing content marketing that you love, not that you think you have to do because somebody told you you had to on social media, and then finally monetize. By the time you actually put your brilliance out to the world, people notice because there's an energetic density to that brilliance. You get noticed among the noise. The picture is the key that unlocks the noise, right? Yeah.
You know how many people are listening to this episode right now? They're listening to the podcast, and all they can imagine is the napkin with the dots. This is me. I'm this circle. This circle is my first person I sign up under me. This person's the next person I sign up under me. Because this idea of a cocktail napkin presentation is very rooted in network marketing.
Yes.
So which is brilliant, because if you can explain it on the back of a napkin, everybody's going to understand it. So how do we take this? Because most of the people listening are network marketers. I mean, I know my audience. They're network marketers. Good. So let's take this cocktail napkin presentation and lift it off. Let's take away the network marketing piece of it and put it on any business. What goes on that napkin?
What goes on that napkin for any business is fully dependent on what that business is and what it boils down to. Okay. So like my thought leadership business, like what I have, okay, I sell services around my ideas and the words that generate from my ideas, right? The messaging and the monetization plans. So my model of clarify, amplify, monetize is how I'm going to build that business. It's what services that I'm offering. But there's other things that you can do that are like, here's what your value is. Like have them start thinking, any business owner, have them start thinking of, if I had only 3 to 9 words that I would write on a cocktail napkin about why what I'm talking about is important and why they need my help to help them. It always needs to be that. It always needs to be, what are you doing to help? Okay. Because nobody cares about what you've done and all of the accolades that you've done. And they certainly don't care about some acronym you've created. Okay. That they don't really pay attention to. What they care about is, if you're going to whip out a cocktail napkin and say, I'm so excited about this, I want to tell you about it, you have something on that cocktail napkin that are your 3 biggest differentiators of what you want to bring. That just start there. Your 3 biggest differentiators. Okay. Like even just start creating a model of like a Venn, I hope I'm getting this right. A Venn diagram of 3 circles with an intersection in the middle of the 3 circles, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And having, this is the reason why I love my business. This is the reason why I love my business. And this is the reason why I love my business. But the problem that you solve, not just we're because we serve the community or because we are family oriented. No, nobody cares. Yeah. Go to what pain do you solve? Yeah. And scratch it with those words. Scratch it with those words. That's what I would recommend, because that is the quickest way people will notice.
If we're doing the Venn diagram, the problem is the thing in the middle where all the circles.
You're the one in the middle.
And the problems are the 3 circles. Okay.
You hold that space. You basically say, here's what's amazing about this business, right? It's this. It acts like this. It does this over here on the right. And it has this aspect here. There's at least you start creating some kind of visual structure around the value of your business, right? The value of your business.
This is easy to teach. That's really easy to teach.
It's easy to, what are the 3 words? Talk about it in my presentation. If anybody wants to hear about how to crystallize your brand, how to crystallize, you know, I do presentations on this, workshops with this, is let's just start with 3 words. Okay. Just don't worry about the picture. See, my process is to create the picture, right, first, and then the words off of the picture. But I've already digested lots and lots and lots of words to get me to the picture. So what is shortcutting for your listeners to do and viewers to do is to go, what would be 3 words that I could really lean into, that I believe in my heart, this thing does, that I care about, right? Like, let's say if you are in a network marketing and you say, the reason why I truly love this product or this company is because it makes me feel alive to have a purpose that's going to help people make better choices and faster choices and healthier choices in the kitchen. It makes me feel alive to have a purpose. And this is a great company that lets me do this. And it also makes me feel, grateful because I can have more freedom to teach my daughter in our 3-bedroom apartment about Napoleon Hill. Okay. Like, and it makes me feel, powerful because, you know, I'm in partnership with a great company that does great service for great clients, and I can make better choices with my life because of it. Right. And I can help other women or men or people make better choices with it. So get to its essence, get to its heart of why you're doing what you're doing. Right. I mean, as far as contextual models, which is what I create for people, Simon Sinek has the most glorious contextual model on the planet, his golden circle of, why, how, and what. right? The concentric circles, you know, those in that field. And that, of course, is a great utilization of a contextual model for a business is his own. There's that. And so we're talking about the why. We're talking about the why and not the how and the what. The hows and the whats are the features and the benefits and all the things, okay? And the current offers and what's your discount and how many calls are you making and all the things. But when you can really put your finger on the pulse of the why and name it in words, not phrases, not catchphrases, not a bunch of, I want to make the world a better place because of the blah, 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 blah. Nope. Give me three words.
I just started twitching.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So finding the three words that resonate with you, but would also resonate with a customer.
Yes. Can I give you an example?
Absolutely.
Okay. So always start, I'm going to bring in my sales and marketing part now. Okay. So always start with, in my view, you want to pierce, when you're piercing the noise of the marketplace, the most impactful way to do that is to scratch the pain, right? What is the fundamental thing that your customers are feeling the absence of that they need? Okay. Scratch it and name it right off the top. So I know that my three pain points that I solve and I can prove that I solve is their primary pain points are less. They have loss of clarity. They have misaligned strategies because they have a loss of clarity. They're doing one thing over here and it doesn't work out. And they're doing this over here and it doesn't work out. And they don't have the same languaging and all that, right? And then sluggish sales. Because they're built on a rocky foundation, everything is changing every quarter. They don't know, what are we talking about? What should I be doing my content marketing on? I don't know what I should be doing. Right? When it's built on a rocky foundation or an unstable foundation, you're not going to get that level of sales activities. Okay. Because you're going to show up weak. You're going to show up compromised. You're going to show up insecure. You're going to show up not in a way that blasts them with enthusiasm and confidence and competence, both those things. Right. So it's not enough to be confident. You also need to be competent. And when you have even a simple drawing of, I love this company because the three things, and you draw a heart and you have three little things that come off of it. And you say, I love it for this. And I love it for this. And I love it for this. That's enough right mm-hmm. now.
Yeah.
Right?
Three
because
is a magic
those
number.
Three words. Three is a sacred magic number that demonstrably is soothing to the human soul and mind. Mm-hmm. They love patterns, right? Mm-hmm. So here's an example. I know my three pain points, right? Loss of clarity, misaligned strategies, sluggish sales. So then I started thinking, okay, what are three characteristics of mine that solve that problem? What are three adjectives of me? Not that I'm a good connector, not that I have a background in, but like literally what makes me me, right? What makes me to be able to do that? Well, one is that I'm highly intuitive because of years and years of meditation and, energy work and practice, right? Of just being intuitive. I can feel when somebody lights up. When I'm watching a 2-hour presentation of somebody, I will get 30 seconds in that 2-hour presentation when I can actually feel it. Whoa, they are alive there. Right? That's that intuitiveness that is critical to the first pain point that I experience, right? The first pain or that they experience that I'm going to help solve. So my intuition is what drives that clarity. And then the next one is I am a co-creator. I mean, I was born into that, right? And that's going to help get you the clear strategies, right? You're going to get clear because you're going to be able to talk to somebody about it. And then I am persuasive. I could, like I said, I could pull the paint off the walls if I wanted to, because I understood at a very young age, we're bringing it all back to square one. When I was 5 years old around these dining room tables and driving in the rusty Datsun B210 with my mom, after she was working a full-time job as a nurse, going in a blizzard in a snowstorm in Minnesota with her two big suitcases of product that it was the most fun thing on the planet was her products to use, that she would just say, the key is you got to just be where you are and you make them feel special. every single person, you see the light within them and you make them feel special. You turn that light on, you keep that light going. She would teach me those things, right? And so I've brought that to a level of persuasion in a typical sales role, yes. Okay. But I also know it just intrinsically that when you are lit up like that and you are present with somebody and you show up, you don't have to sell, right? Yeah. You show and tell who you are. And that's what is what's so great about having a model is you just go, look at this, look at this. This is what I love, right? Not look at me.
Yeah. Well, the Mary Kay Ash's most famous quote, everybody wears a sign around their neck that says, make me feel important.
Yes.
So when you are reading their sign rather than flashing yours,
exactly,
that's when the magic happens.
And it happens. It's so beautiful when it happens. And this is why, again, I was taught this and it's in my bones is when I'm working with people, it's a true practice of like, okay, where are they now? Right. Stopping and not worrying about any sales and not my process, my methodology. I'm going to be the facilitator of it. I'm going to bring a draft. I'm going to bring an open mind and some ways we can do it. I'm going to bring a highly creative, you know, word nerd. And we're going to create something together. And that's what I think is truly magical about it. I really love it. And I wanted to share with you something about, you know, the power of bringing something down to its essence, cocktail napkin selling, and also kind of its wonderful stepsister, post-it note performance. So I was practicing right before this interview, Candace, I was practicing my 7-minute set that I will be doing stand-up comedy at the National Speakers Association National Conference in 3 days. Okay. I'm doing 7 minutes of the scariest thing anybody can do. I mean, honestly, it is truly the most terrifying thing of all of it. And I love it. And the worst thing happened when I was doing my dry run. And right before this interview, I was doing it. I've done it maybe 20 times now, right? 20, 30 times I've done my seven minute thing with a fake microphone, right? As I'm practicing my bit. And I blanked. And I mean blanked. No, I could not see my way out. I could not see. And that's every performer's true nightmare, right? Blanking. And I'm a professional, I'm going to get my certified speaking professional medal at this very same conference. And I just 3 days before doing it, and for 250 of my colleagues, I just blanked. And after I, you know, resuscitated myself from the sheer panic, I went, oh, wait, what's in your toolkit? The post-it note. So I wrote my set list. This is my set list on a little torn up post-it note that I'm now going to have with me at all times for the next 3 days that I'm going to be using the power of a crystallized message, right? My set list.
Yeah.
But it's like, we sometimes have to go through the ick before we realize we got to get it back to simple, mm-hmm. right? We got to get
really
drown in the words
that's like
before
when
we get it back to simple.
When kids used to write the answers on their hands. Mm-hmm. I love it.
I am absolutely going to use this little piece of paper on Friday night.
Which is absolutely brilliant. You know, right. We have a very similar story. Not only are we the same age, but we have a lot of the same stuff that we did when we were kids, right? So I was Lieutenant Janice in the play MASH, my sophomore year of high school. And it's a scene where Major Houlihan is dressing down the ladies, the nurses in the tent. And I blanked on my line, but recovered. Right. Mm-hmm. And 3 months later, an announcement comes on the overhead monitor in the school. And the principal announces that I had won an acting award from the Secondary School Theater Association of California for my role as Janice in the play MASH. Right. I had blanked for a second, right?
Yeah,
right? But I still did an award-winning performance. I mean, 16-year-olds, how award-winning could it be? But
hey, you know, I won awards too. Don't knock it. I was best thespian at 17 years of age.
Yeah.
And best actress.
Oh yeah, so. I have all those. So, even in those moments of when you lose something, you can still recover. So don't panic. Don't panic.
Exactly.
Just come back to panic. Where, just come back to center.
Come back to center and get a post-it note.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get a post-it note. Right.
Yeah. Well, and it was not only that did you know, Margaret Houlihan, the character playing Margaret, the actress playing Margaret Houlihan, the way she looked at me, and then I looked at her, and then the line came, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was a perfect, so everything fell together, right?
Yeah.
So the me choking up on my line worked really well because of the way Houlihan looked at Janice at that moment when Candace forgot Janice's line. Right.
Yes. Yes. Oh, exactly. I mean, that's part of the fun is to just be able to kind of build. I believe that there is real power in connection, you know, and as soon as you connect to somebody, and when I was blanking and I was panicking about that, I thought, no, just you'll look at someone and then you'll remember.
Yeah.
What the next one is.
You have your thing, right? You have your
now
your
I'm
list.
Happy. I'm actually grateful. Yeah. It's coming back to you full circle, Candace, is I'm grateful that I blanked. I'm grateful that I had the heart race, the, oh my gosh, I actually forgot. Where am I? Because you automatically, even it's just rehearsal, you really do project yourself to like what it's going to be like if that would actually happen, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that would be horrible.
And now you know how to handle it.
And now I know how to handle it. So I'm grateful for the opportunity. So now I know it's going to rock. I'm going to deliver drop the mic performance because of that previous whiff, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think it's really hilarious that you think the humorous speech is the hardest one to give.
That I think the humorous speech is the hardest
one. Because you said that the stand-up comedy was the hardest speech to give earlier.
Stand-up comedy is by far, I think, the hardest to deliver, but more than doing improv, more than doing motivational speaking, more than doing a performance.
Well, I guess it really does depend on the audience, doesn't it?
It absolutely depends on the audience. You know, just as an example, you know, going to an open mic at midnight on a Saturday night in a basement in dark, in heels, with knowing no one, being 18th on the list, getting up there and making people laugh for 5 minutes, that takes a special kind of badass to be able to do that. Okay. Cause you don't, it's a heterogeneous, drunk, audience usually. And so you don't know what you're going to get, and you need to know your material. You need to know yourself, and you need to be comfortable in yourself. And for me, you know, just showing up like that, I love being on stage. I love doing comedy. I just don't love the lifestyle that it would be like, you know?
No.
So I treasure the moments when I have speaking events or that I go to a conference and somebody has this kind of, you know, experience or a hosted event, you know, where I can really kind of let loose, but it's not something that everybody's got to choose, Candace, you know, it's like all of us have brilliance. And one of the things that I do as a crystallizer is I read once of Michelangelo saying, I chipped away all that wasn't David. Okay. You just have
That's
to
a
chip
good quote.
Away. Yeah, I know. I mean, you can really see it, right? You can really see it in your head. And it's like, that's what we do in life. And the older that we get, the more we want to just really value every, you know, moment. And we want to be able to leverage our gifts and talents in the most, the optimal way, right? How can I make the biggest possible impact and enjoy myself to the greatest degree that I can? And so while stand-up comedy is like, oh, I love it so much. I mean, I've loved it since childhood, right? I used to do bits as a kid. I did bits as a kid. So for me to not have that as a part of my equation, you know, is like, okay, well, that's, I'm chipping it away because I'm really crafting the life that I truly, truly want. You know, you can't do everything. You can have it all. You just can't have it all at the same time. That famous quote, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about here. So I don't get it all, but I get it a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful. And I'm grateful for it.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So what is your favorite marketing tool, tip, or technique?
Besides the cocktail napkin, I mean, that is my favorite tool, tip or technique is take a napkin out and write it down, write something down that makes you want that person to keep it going. Okay. That's the favorite tip.
That's perfect. It's perfect. All right. This is your moment of gratitude. For whom or what are you most grateful?
I'm grateful that I get to do my 7 minutes of flawless comedy that I'm going to do in a couple of days. or near flawless.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on Audible, iTunes, Good Pods, or your preferred podcast player. Our theme music is track 14 by Rev Brock and Soul Lily. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for the show notes, where you can find links to all the groovy resources we've mentioned, including ways to connect with our guest, Teresa Rose. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy.